From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Municipalities, counties, and states, by law, have to redraw district lines each decade through a process known as redistricting. The La Crosse County Board recently voted to divide itself into 29 districts, downsizing from 35. Based on population numbers, the city of La Crosse would get 13 districts, which is down from the current 17. Historically, the La Crosse County Board and City Council have had the same district lines, but some members of the City Council do not want to go down to 13 seats. So, a debate is underway on whether the City Council should follow the same district lines as the County Board, or if members should do their own thing. I spoke with two City Council members today who have different opinions on the matter. First up is Andrea Richmond. She's on the La Crosse County Board and City Council. She served on the county's redistricting committee and is currently working on the city's reapportionment committee.
Well, as you know, the county board did vote in favor of having the 29 county board supervisors with 13 supervisors in the city of La Crosse. And my hope would be to have 13 council, city council members also, so that all the districts would be coterminous. In the meetings and the discussions, the city council reapportionment committee had given direction to the county that they would like more than the 13. They wanted to go with either 15, 16, or 17.
And 17 is what they're at now.
And now 17 is what the city's reapportionment committee has decided they would like to go forward with. And I feel that, you know, it's going to be very confusing for some of these voters in La Crosse by having the 17. And I would hope, it hasn't been finalized by the city council, but I'm hoping that it would stay at the 13. If it doesn't, you know, I guess the wards will be decided by the city council. But I think looking back, it would have been better to have a not just the county committee making that decision, it would have been better to have a city joint county redistricting so everybody could meet at the table and have those decisions made. I think it would have been better off for the whole city and the county together working to have one resolution.
And you said, so the reapportionment committee is set on this 17, the number 17 currently. You have another meeting next week. Is there any chance that the number could go down to 13 or even 15, like you said? Or where does it stand?
Yeah. The meeting is scheduled for Tuesday at 6:30 at City Hall. The committee, other than Eric Schmidt and myself, we voted for the 13, and the other three members voted for the 17. But the plan right now is the planning department is going to set out the mapping for this and come up with the wards for that 17 council members. I feel that the prediction will be it will be with 17 aldermanic districts and then go for the final vote before the city council. There will be confusion, but, you know, hopefully we come to some type of reconciliation with trying to make it as easy as possible for even the city clerks. It will, in the end, cost more for the taxpayers to have that extra 17 with the additional work that has to be done with programming the districts and so on.
And one of the arguments made to keep 17 districts within the city of La Crosse for the city council was to have a manageable workload and to also to know your constituents better. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, most of the city council members have lived in this community for a long time. And my district in particular, I know a lot of community members and voters in my district. Adding that extra from 3,000 to 3,900 would not be an issue. With the technology that we have nowadays, it's very easy to take your messages and follow up with a phone call, email, whatever, for your ways of communicating back to the issues someone may have. And it's not a heavy workload. It's just getting the information back to the constituents that have those questions, and it certainly wouldn't be a problem.
And it's no secret that redistricting really comes down to politics. Do you think that a lot of this has to do with city council members not wanting to lose their seats?
And I agree. There is somewhat of a political end of it. And you'd hate to lose that neighborhood that you've lived in a long time and all of a sudden be in a different district. And I think that's some of the issues that for representation that some of the city council members have. And I certainly can, you know, I feel that they want to continue that continuity, and I certainly understand that. But a redistricting plan, you're told when you're looking at that plan, all the lines are thrown out. And it shouldn't have any effect on where you live, but it certainly came up, you know, in the discussion at the county and now at the city. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, I'll leave it at that.
And what have your discussions been like with other members of the city council that are not on the reapportionment committee with you? Do they seem behind the number 13, 17? Are people just waiting for the five of you to make a decision?
I think probably the ones that I have talked to probably will go with the 17 council members. They're comfortable with that. And I know Councilmember Farmer had stated that even when you're dividing it up for the separate standing committees, it's going to be less on those standing committees, and you have more of a, I guess, a vote if you have a larger committee staff. So, you know, all plans can work out, but other communities in the state of Wisconsin are going with less council members and less county board supervisors, and I see that, you know, we as a city probably should follow suit, but I don't see that happening at this time.
Andrea Richmond is a La Crosse County Board supervisor and city council member. We're talking about the city's redistricting plans. City Council member Jim Bladorn is also on the reapportionment committee. He tells me why he thinks the city should stick with 17 districts.
Well, there were a variety of things that went into the mix, and unfortunately, the county wanted to cut back, and they used the reasoning that it's popular opinion. I guess I'm not so sure that that's necessarily the case, but in any case, the city functions very, very well with 17. We have three standing committees, and 17 gets at least five council members on each one of those committees, and that's worthwhile because they all require that sort of input. And what happens is the fewer representatives you have, the less voice each individual constituent, each resident has in the city. So La Crosse only had about 2,000 fewer people, if that, back in the days when there were 21 council members. So what really happens is the lower you drop this, the less personal rapport you have with each of your constituents. And that, to me, at this level of government, is a very serious issue. It just takes away democracy from people. And the city council is probably the best value that anybody in La Crosse gets for their money from a governmental standpoint, because the whole council, all 17 members, actually cost a little less than half of the cost of one department head for the city. And yet we work very, very hard to represent our constituents. For example, I deal with people on a daily basis that have issues with the city, questions about how things work. We're out there on the line all the time to respond to our constituents. So watering that down would only get less customer service, so to speak.
And I know that was one of the arguments, was that if the city council did drop down to 13 to remain coterminous with the county, was that each city council member would have a larger workload.
It's not the workload itself. In talking to actually former Mayor Pat Zielke the other day, we agreed that the issue isn't really the workload, but it's the personal contact. And that's one of the things that would be sadly missing, is just being able to know as many of your constituents and talk to them one-on-one.
And another argument on the flip side then has been that if city council and county boards districts all remain coterminous, that would eliminate voter confusion. Is that something that you're concerned about, not only voter confusion, but maybe poll worker confusion in future elections?
Well, I think that most people can read a map. I don't see that should be an issue. Obviously, there would be some questions over, oh, which side of the street do you live on, so which ward do you fall into or which district do you fall into? And I guess I feel that what's really unfortunate is when the county drew these boundaries, they looked basically at census blocks and numbers, and they didn't take into consideration the fact that the city is very, very different from the county.
Would you have liked to maybe had the city more involved with the county during this process? I know that there were some members of the city council who are also on the county board involved in the process. But, you know, 10 years down the line, would you like the city to have more of a voice?
Well, on the county board, it has to be equitable. And that's what the county has done, I think. They have the various supervisory districts divided up so that they're approximately equal, and that's what the law requires. And unfortunately, however, the large districts that the supervisors represent have an inherent diversity, and they don't have the same kind of issues that the city has. So because of that, the ability for the council members to know the people in their district and to actually get out and about and talk to those individuals is a very different requirement than you would expect on the county level and certainly at the state and federal levels.
So then on the county board, some of the supervisors who voted against the number 29, some of them, it seemed like they were nervous that they would have to run against another incumbent, that they could potentially lose their seat. Do you think that is some of the reasons that certain city council members don't necessarily want to go down to 13?
I don't know the answer to that. I've not talked to anybody that will admit to that. I know that I personally, I came back to the council because I ran again because it seemed to me that the city needed the help. But as far as the council being my life or anything like that, I'm ready to retire. I really am. And I came back because I felt like the city really needed some common sense voices on the council.
Jim Bladorn is a La Crosse City Council member. And now, on to another topic that will affect Wisconsin voters in the future. Beginning with the next presidential election in 2012, the state's voters will have to show a picture form of identification. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker signed a bill into law yesterday, one that's been pushed for years by the GOP. I spoke with UW-Milwaukee Professor of Governmental Affairs, Mordecai Lee, about some of the potential impacts of the voter ID law.
I think it's important to try to sidestep the sort of ideological left-right fight that's going on about this bill. After all, people who are right of center think this bill is the greatest idea since sliced bread, and people who are left of center think that this is a threat to democracy. Rather, I think we have to step back and consider the issue from the point of view of broad participation in democracy. And I'm especially thinking about Australia. In Australia, if I recall correctly, people are actually fined if they don't vote. In other words, that the entire political establishment is tilted towards encouraging people to vote, rather than having these sort of American left-right issues of supposedly the right wanting to suppress votes and the left wanting to encourage voting to the point of fraud. And so that's an indication that really the voter ID bill is just sort of cannon fodder for the two parties battling it out, trying to win by any means necessary. As a professor of government, I think we have to try to picture the technicalities of the bill. In other words, to physically try to think through the impact that the bill might have on voting. And what in particular would be the case is that when the voter walks up to the polling workers, the polling workers would now ask for a photo ID and would ask the voter to sign the voter log. Those are two things that don't occur right now. Right now, you walk up to the table and you say your name and address, and they look you up and then hand you a ballot. And so I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be a very significant slowdown in the pace of voting, because sort of when you think about it, you're standing in line at, I don't know, Best Buy, and you're waiting for 10 people in front of you to flash their credit card, and then they have to show ID, and then so on and so forth. And so it's going to slow things down, and I don't think this is going to be particularly apparent in some of the sort of typical low turnout spring elections that we have in Wisconsin. But when you think about the fall partisan elections, a November election like last fall, an off-year election, not a presidential year, but still there was a very large turnout, about 60% turnout, or in November of 12 on a presidential year, sometimes you can get as high as a 90% turnout. Sometimes even without the voter ID bill, there are lines to vote, and sometimes in student wards, for example, people might complain they had to wait an hour in line, they had to wait 2 hours in line. I'm trying to imagine what it's going to be like having voter ID in a presidential election in November of 12. I think this might double the waiting time, simply because even if everybody's trying to be cooperative, everybody has their driver's license ready, the poll workers understand what the new requirements are, it's just simply going to slow things down. And I think this is going to lead to a certain amount of unhappiness. And what I'm afraid is going on right now is there are sort of two, I guess you call them legal realities. There's the Republican legal reality that wants voter ID, and there's the Democratic legal reality that doesn't. And if we were to have an election where the power shifted from Republicans to Democrats, I'd guess the Democrats would repeal voter ID. And then in the next election, if Republicans become the majority party, they would reinstate it. And so we're going to have this sort of flip-flop, a never-ending partisan battle about voter ID, which is really a new phenomenon in Wisconsin politics. Up to now, it's sort of been, if you get a bill passed and if it's a law, that's it. The argument is done. Now we're in a situation of perpetual warfare between the parties, and they're constantly repealing each other's enactments. And this is sort of one of those examples.
I'm curious what you think, how you see elections going on college campuses with the voter ID bill. I know that lawmakers have said that they would like students' home addresses printed on their college IDs. I have heard some college officials say that that could be a security issue. What are your thoughts on that? And then how do you see this actually affecting elections on college campuses?
I think the bill is going to make it very, very hard for college students to vote, because when you think about it, unless they've got a driver's license with the address they have while they're students in college, it would take an enormous amount of paperwork. It would probably take 3 or 4 documents for them to establish that they're enrolled in a university locally and that this is their local address and this is a photo ID. So the current long lines that sometimes happen on campuses in high turnout elections are really going to become even longer. And the long-run effect might be to discourage students from voting on campus and therefore changing the political makeup of that district. And it would push students to vote back home, where they grew up, where they went to high school, where their parents still live. And so I think this is going to have a ripple effect in politics. And presumably, because of the partisan warfare going on in Madison right now, Republicans are delighted by this sort of cascading effect of voter ID, and Democrats are outraged by it. And so, yet again, more partisan infighting.
So if students were to vote at home, that could lead to an increase in absentee voting. And how do you see this bill affecting absentee voting, not just for college students, but for everyone within the state of Wisconsin?
The bill went against some of the trends in absentee voting that have been occurring by shortening the amount of time that a person can engage in absentee voting. And it was sort of growing as a custom in Wisconsin that instead of thinking of Election Day as the day to vote, one thought of sort of the month before the election as a time when one could go to City Hall and vote and avoid the lines and get it taken care of. I think what this new law is doing is it's saying we want to reestablish absentee voting for what its original old-fashioned purpose was, and that was for people who literally would be absent, as opposed to making it more convenient to vote within a month of the election.
So there's been some talk that this law was fast-tracked in order to have it in place for the recall elections this summer. But Republicans have been trying to get the voter ID law through, you know, for at least a decade. What are your thoughts on you know, having this have to do with anything with the recall election?
It's important to emphasize that the law will take effect in the presidential primary in February of 12. In other words, it will not be in effect for any of the recall elections that will be occurring this summer. However, what will be in effect is a kind of a dry run. In other words, a voter presents himself or herself to the polling station, and they're going to ask for a voter ID. They're going to ask for a person to sign the log. But if a person either doesn't have it or declines to show it, that person can still vote. So in other words, we're going to sort of have one foot in these two worlds, the pre and the post. And it'll probably cause some confusion. But on the other hand, it would not prevent anybody from voting in the recall elections if they don't have a photo ID.
I know that Wisconsin has downsized their DMV centers, and I know they've cut back on hours within the DMV. Do you know if there are other plans to kind of put more money back into the DMV if more people are going to need IDs?
I believe that the estimated cost of the bill was about $7 million, and that some of it would be allocated to the state agency that oversees elections, the Government Accountability Board. And I believe that some of the money would go to DMV for them to be issuing free photo IDs for people who don't drive. But I think it's going to cause a significant impact, and I don't know if the allocation of money is adequate to cover it.
Mordecai Lee is a professor of governmental affairs from UW-Milwaukee. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroob, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.